Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the USA Freedom Act, a watered-down NSA surveillance reform bill that passed the House last Thursday by 303 to 121 votes. Shahid Bhattar, the executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and the People's Campaign for the Constitution, joins us to discuss the gutting of the first legislation aimed at curbing the abuses that Edward Snowden revealed through last-minute language inserted by intelligence community loyalists. We will also look into the disappointment expressed by Senator Leahy, whose much stronger Senate bill will be considered next month. Then we'll speak with Graham Fuller, the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA and the author of a new book, Turkey and the Arab Spring, Leadership in the Middle East. He joins us to discuss the growing irrelevance of U.S. policies and attitudes in the region that are tied to reactionary regimes like Saudi Arabia, while Turkey's Muslim model of dynamic and effective democratic governance is all but ignored in a region where the Arab world is adrift and where conventional U.S.-centric analysis does not reflect the Middle East's own history and culture. Then finally, Francis Kissling, the former president of Catholics for Choice, who is a consultant to the Western Hemisphere region of the International Planned Parenthood Federation, joins us to discuss restrictive new anti-abortion laws passed last week in Louisiana that add to Alabama's, Mississippi's, and Texas's efforts to outlaw abortion by forcing abortion clinics out of business through the imposition of onerous medical burdens on their clinics. We will discuss the growing red and blue state divide in America and the prospect of millions of women taking buses north for procedures that are legal in the nation but unattainable in the South. And joining us now is Shahid Bhattar, who is the Executive Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and the People's Campaign for the Constitution. Previously, he was Director of a national program to combat racial and religious profiling by federal authorities, an Associate Director of the American Constitution Society, and a public interest litigator in private practice. Welcome to Background Briefing, Shahid Bhattar.
Thanks so much for having me on, Ian.
And the NSA Surveillance Reform Bill, as it's called, the USA Freedom Act, passed the House by 303 votes to 121 a few days ago. And it looks as though this is the worst kind of reform, isn't it? Where you have the appearance of reform, but apart from the fact that they've are not going to collect metadata anymore, at least as they used to, but essentially it doesn't really seem to, from what I can tell, and maybe there's more to be learned, this really hasn't addressed any of the issues that have been raised since Edward Snowden brought them to light.
You're exactly right. The original version of the USA Freedom Act would have imposed quite meaningful reforms on government surveillance run amok. Unfortunately, the version of the USA Freedom Act that emerged from the House is a pale shadow of its original self. And not only would the bill as revised not only fail to curtail NSA surveillance, but there are a number of ways in which it could actually make it worse. And it's worth noting, for instance, that the bill extends the Patriot Act and the sunsets on it for 2 years. It, while making very meager changes to Section 215 of the Patriot Act, that's the provision that enables the telephony metadata surveillance, it does essentially nothing to curtail Internet surveillance under Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And that under-inclusion renders the bill, as it was ultimately passed by the House, very problematic and even potentially counterproductive.
So the people who brought it forth, Sensenbrenner and Justin Amash, who originally, remember just shortly after this, these revelations happened, Justin Amash put up a bill that failed by 205 to 217 votes. And that shocked the intelligence community because it came so close.
Big deal. I mean, his bill would have defunded the NSA domestic dragnet. It was a huge surprise to the intelligence establishment that so groundbreaking a bill would come so close to passage.
So what happened to his constituency? Did they just get worn down? Or, I mean, we know the bill was watered down, but how did the intelligence community get somehow dampen all that passion? And, I mean, let's face it, a lot of people didn't vote for it, 121, and 303 voted for it. So there are a lot of people who know that they got had and didn't vote for it. I'm not sure where. Do you know how Amash voted on this?
I don't know how he particularly voted, but the original sponsors of the USA Freedom Act in the House were James Sensenbrenner, the Republican on the Judiciary Committee, and John Conyers, who is the former chair of that committee, a Democrat. And it was a bipartisan initiative, also led in the Senate by Patrick Leahy. And I think the key piece to think about with respect to the USA Freedom Act is the co-optation of meaningful reforms by the intelligence agencies and the executive branch, notwithstanding a bipartisan consensus across two different congressional committees. When the House Judiciary Committee approved the USA Freedom Act, it did it unanimously. And when the Intelligence Committee reviewed its bill to restrain NSA surveillance, it basically, on the hearing that it was scheduled to look at its bill, it instead looked at the USA Freedom Act. And what the House voted on this week was not the result of that process, but rather the co-opted result of a backdoor process where the White House, in collaboration with the House leadership, gutted that bill and instead presented to the House a co-opted version of NSA reform that is ultimately as enabling as it is reforming. And so you're absolutely right to note how it is a vast disappointment relative to the initial expectation. The two things I'd say there is, A, the battle now moves to the Senate, where a stronger version of the original bill still survives, and B, you know, even if the strongest version of the USA Freedom Act passed, there would still be more to do to rein in the NSA's dragnet. Congress has a lot of work to do to unwind the last 12 years, and unfortunately, it's just getting started.
So do you think that some of the people who defected and voted against it because they thought it was too watered down, I mean, the two people that sponsored the bill, Republican Jim Sensenbrenner and Democrat John Conyers, both backed the bill, but influential Republicans like Darrell Issa, Ted Poe, and Raul Labrador, and Democrat Zoe Lofgren and Adam Smith, the most senior Democrat on the Armed Services Committee, they all voted against the bill. They felt
right. Amash did too. I checked since you asked. He also voted against
it. Yeah, I would have thought so, yeah. And Zoe Lofgren said, "Regrettably, we have learned that the intelligence community will run a truck through ambiguity." So
she's right. I mean, the provision of the Patriot Act that was at issue with most of the provisions of the USA Freedom Act, that's Section 215 of the Patriot Act, which enables the surveillance of telephony metadata, basically tapping the back end of the phone system. That provision itself has been the subject of a secret government interpretation that for years members of Congress would say or have said would outrage the American people if it were public. And, of course, it took 12 years and Edward Snowden to make public even just a little bit of what is happening, and we still don't know. Congress also still does not know the full extent of the NSA's assault on the American people, and as long as it continues to legislate in the dark, it is entirely predictable that the meager attempts that Congress makes to place the genie of domestic surveillance back in the bottle will leave cards on the table. And at the very least, Congress has to finally, for the first time in 40 years, actually investigate the intelligence agencies, and it hasn't done it. And until that happens, everything we talk about will unfortunately start from the position of not completing the job.
Again, I'm speaking with Shahid Bhattar, who is the Executive Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and the People's Campaign for the Constitution. Previously, he was Director of a National Program to Combat Racial and Religious Profiling by Federal Authorities, an Associate Director of the American Constitution Society, and a public interest litigator in private practice. So the mood on Capitol Hill, and certainly it's reflected in the White House, has been fairly much about the idea that American secrecy, if you will, is leaking like a sieve, and Snowden is the poster boy for that, and that we've got to tighten up the rules, and we've particularly got to make examples of people like James Risen of the New York Times. That seems to be the mood. Now, you know, it's a folly and a massive mistake in terms of the First Amendment to go after reporters for doing their job if the intelligence community can't keep its own secrets. So isn't there a lot of scapegoating going on here?
Absolutely, there's a lot of scapegoating going on here. You know, apparently there was a FOIA request that today unleashed or revealed part of a Defense Department analysis that aimed to document and explain the damage on our foreign policy interests that the Snowden revelations supposedly wrought. And, you know, there is so much self-dealing here that when called on the carpet by members of Congress, to admit essentially their constitutional crimes, executive officials across each of the last two administrations have flat out lied to Congress. And I don't think there is a worse crime in a democracy than lying to the body, the people's representatives in Washington, the people who write the checks for these executive programs, when they do the rare, when, as they rarely do, they actually perform their jobs and ask the tough questions, and the executive branch lies and gets away with it. I think that that indicates and reflects exactly that kind of, I dare say, institutional corruption that you're describing, and it's unfortunately pervasive across the intelligence agencies.
But it seems to be driven by an attitude that's coming from the White House and from Obama, that somehow the press is being irresponsible, and they have to be made an example of in the case of James Risen. It's likely that that he's going to lose at the Supreme Court, or they're going to throw it back, which will mean that he'll go to jail, isn't it?
Well, and expand the context, you're absolutely right that, for instance, the Justice Department was caught tapping the phones of Associated Press journalists just about a year ago. In fact, the preceding news cycle before the Snowden revelations was about the assault on the press. The only place where I guess I would differ with you is to say that, to the extent it's emerging from the White House, I wouldn't locate it exclusively at President Obama's feet. I think this is just what presidents do, regardless of who the president is, right? And I think one of the things we can learn from the Obama administration and its unfortunate failure to effectuate its campaign mandate is the co-optation of any chief executive in the service of the enlargement of executive power. We can't actually vote away these powers, right? If the courts aren't independent and Congress is co-opted and beholden to corporations, and the White House can't be trusted to actually defend the interests of the American people because it has its own interests, which occupy whomever comes into that office, what it really suggests is the need to shift the landscape, as our nation has done many times before on any number of issues, ranging from women's suffrage to environmental regulation or civil rights, right? That it is grassroots movements that determine the terms of debate in our country. And we are in desperate need of one to grow louder than it has to this point in challenging the emergence of the imperial presidency.
Well, I suppose, for, you know, when you say presidents get co-opted, there's no question about it that, you know, the massive power of the office, particularly during the Cold War, where you could literally press a button and destroy the world, and that reminder is always there. You know, the football, the guy with the nuclear code still wanders around behind the president. But that notwithstanding, I understand why presidents, even those that wanted to destroy the CIA, like Jack Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs debacle, and Jimmy Carter, who ran against the CIA and the abuses during the Church Committee hearings, they all turn around and use it with a vengeance because it's the favorite tool of the executive branch. So I suspect that what happens to all presidents is they get sort of bonded with the intelligence agencies, they rely on them. And in Obama's case, I think he's haunted by the idea that if there's another terrorist attack on the United States, his presidency is over or the country will go crazy again. Do you buy into that notion? I'm not trying to make excuses for him, but I'm just trying to understand his mentality.
I do tend to think that's right, and I think I'd reflect on it in two different dimensions. The first is that, to whatever extent officials in the Obama administration and perhaps the president himself want their legacy not to be some catastrophic attack on the United States, the alternative danger, and the one that I think that they have gone beyond risking and have now solidified and secured, is that his legacy, the legacy of this administration, will be the entrenchment of the Bush administration's legacy and the bipartisan entrenchment of the imperial presidency to the derogation of the constitutional design that our nation was once very proud to have pioneered and introduced to the world. That's the first issue. The second is that I think it is absolutely inescapable. It is demonstrably true that presidents react based on who is whispering in their ears. And for better or worse, the figures that whisper most in the president's ears come from three-letter agencies that are unaccountable to the public, whose histories are pervaded by severe failures, who hide their crimes from Congress and the public, and you know, many of them continue to conduct the very same assaults on the American people that they were under the prior administration. And, of course, it was this president's repudiation of those abuses that got him into office. And yet now he's, you know, essentially driven by the same agencies. I think no issue illustrates this in sharper relief, in my mind, than the extrajudicial assassination regime, right? under the Obama administration, an entirely new class of human rights abuses has emerged in the form of robotic remote assassination. And it was just this week, in fact, an Obama administration senior lawyer from the Office of Legal Counsel was considered by the Senate for a judicial appointment, despite having signed away a right that had stood for 800 years. And not since the Magna Carta has a government claiming itself to be a democracy asserted the right to kill its citizens without any evidence of crime. And that power is now well established in the United States, and the figure who established it seems to be well on their way to becoming a lifetime federal appellate judge. And I think it's appalling, quite frankly.
Well, you know, going back to the Founding Fathers, it was, of course, Benjamin Franklin that said, he who would trade liberty for temporary security deserves neither. And that clearly is a message that has been lost over the ages. But when you were saying earlier, Shahid Bhattar, that there is some hope here that the Senate bill will be tougher. On last Thursday, Senator Leahy issued a statement expressing disappointment in this House bill that we're talking about here, the USA Freedom Act. He said, just to quote what he said last Thursday, is, "Today's action in the House continues the bipartisan effort to restore America's civil liberties. But I was disappointed that the legislation passed today does not include some of the meaningful reforms contained in the original USA Freedom Act. I will continue to push for these important reforms when the Senate Judiciary Committee considers the USA Freedom Act next month." So this would seem to me to be a time for people to get behind the Senate bill, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And I want to say two things about the Senate bill. The first is that it will likely be stronger than the House bill, at least to the extent that it is currently still the original version of the bill, which is much stronger than it was after being watered down, not just once in the House, but twice. Once as it went through committees, and then a second time in secret by the White House after it had passed the committees. The Senate bill is starting out from a much stronger place. Wherever it ends up, it will then have to be reconciled with the House bill. And so that's the first point of slippage, is that whatever emerges from the Senate could well be essentially eroded to meet the least common denominator of what has already passed through the House. Beyond this USA Freedom Act, however, is a further opportunity for Congress to do something meaningful. There's a bill, the Surveillance State Repeal Act, which would actually complete the job of unwinding the Bush administration's legacy with respect to dragnet mass surveillance. It has not attracted nearly as much support from members of Congress, and many members of Congress who are willing to talk a big game about privacy have yet to assertively pick up, champion, and take ownership of the one reform package among the 25 that have been introduced in Congress that would actually force the intelligence agencies to justify the post-9/11 expansion of their powers from a pre-9/11 baseline. And that's exactly what Congress should do, is require the agencies to do exactly that. And only the Surveillance State Repeal Act would do it. And you know, it's not even on the agenda yet. So whatever happens with the USA Freedom Act, Congress will have more to do. It is now, after a year of the Snowden revelations, is Congress even beginning to take the first meager baby steps toward reform, and it has a lot of work remaining.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Shahid Bhattar.
Thanks so much for having me on, Ian. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Shahid Bhattar, who is the Executive Director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and the People's Campaign for the Constitution. Previously, he was Director of a National Program to Combat Racial and Religious Profiling by Federal Authorities, an Associate Director of the American Constitutional Society, and a public interest litigator in private practice. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about America's growing irrelevance in the Middle East.